Marriage by Susan Ferrier, dramatized in 3 episodes by Patricia Hannah. Episode 3, Union.
Glenfern Castle, Argyllshire, North Britain, January the 1st, 1815. My dear Mary, it is always a satisfaction to your friends here to know that you are well. Duncan Dunsmuir has died. Now, you never have met him, and Lady McLaughlin is of the opinion that it was entirely owing to eating raw oysters and damp feet. Your Aunt Nicky asks that you inform your dear mother, Lady Juliana, at the earliest possible opportunity that it is absolutely vital she boils the sheep's head for 7 hours. Miss Patty McPry writes her aunt that there is a strong report of Lord Lindore's marriage to our niece Adelaide. And I shall communicate to you, Mary, a piece of intelligence which I am sure will occasion you the most unfeigned pleasure. The prospect there is of you soon beholding some of your friends from this quarter in Bath. Our valuable friend and neighbour, Sir Sampson McLaughlin, has been rather worse than better since you left us, and Lady McLaughlin has formed the resolution of taking him up to Bath early in May. She has most considerately invited me to accompany them, which I shall do with the greatest of pleasure. Oh, it will be a happy meeting, I'm certain, with Lady Juliana, as it will be 19 years since we have met. You may be sure I have a great deal to tell you about all friends at Glenfern.
I must now bid you adieu, my dear Mary, as Lady Mac... Come in!
Put on your Lennox face this morning, Mary. We are to pay a funeral visit to the Duke of Altamont's sister, a near neighbour, unhappily, who has lately lost her husband.
Oh, Emily, how sad. Why, I shall come at once.
I think it would be fair to warn you, Mary. Lady Matilda Sufton is quite odious.
Lady McLaughlin is expected at any moment. In kind love to Lady Juliana and you, I remain, my dear Mary, your most affectionate aunt, Grizzy Douglas.
Lady Matilda's entrance hall has gone into deep mourning. Even the footman is a ghost of his former self.
I have never seen so much black crape. Lady Matilda must have loved her husband very much.
Oh, the most doting husband. Such a man.
Mr. Sutton was a silly old man who had been dead to the world for years. She married him and buried him alive in his own chamber. She had him disinterred for the purpose of giving him a splendid burial. And that done, her duty is now to mourn for the approbation of the world. For the world is her theatre.
Good afternoon, Lady Matilda.
Oh, dear Lady Emily.
What do you do, Lord Altamont?
Ah, very well, Lady Emily.
Good afternoon, General Carver. Mrs. Finch?
One may pronounce any afternoon good that sees Lady Matilda a little better.
Oh, indeed, a good afternoon. It is a great pleasure to see you here, Mrs. Downright. And Mr. Downright.
Lady Emily. Miss Douglas.
My dear friends here to support me in my bereavement.
Allow me to present my cousin, Miss Mary Douglas.
Lady Matilda, I sympathise
with you. Dear Lady Emily, there is an example we are all bound to show, but such a blow.
Such a blow.
And after such a blow, to see you look so well.
Well, Mrs. Downright, that is wonderful after what I have suffered, but grief, it seems, does not kill.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. I thought it would, but I thought your having been confined to the house for so long might have affected your looks. However, I'm happy to see that it is not the case, as I don't recollect ever to have seen you so bad.
Be seated, Lady Emily, and you, Miss
Douglas.
Yes. I ought to apologize for being thus overcome. cannot be expected that I should at all times find myself able for company.
Not at all, a great deal, my dear.
And I have no doubt that with a very little exertion you could behave as if nothing had happened. It's not the path of duty leads me away. Will you make your goodbyes?
His
uncle, Lord Glenallan, is fading fast. William could be summoned at any moment.
Goodbye, Lady Emily. Pray convey my regards to Lady Juliana. William, take your leave of Miss Douglas.
Oh,
what a charming, intelligent countenance your cousin has, Lady Emily. So comfortable, so pleasant. Indeed, Lady Matilda, I shall return, if possible, tomorrow.
I may not feel strong enough to receive Mrs. Downright tomorrow.
Mrs. Downright's skill in tormenting is so great that she even deprives the tormented of the privilege of complaint.
What's that, Lady Emily?
My cousin and I must deny ourselves the privilege of your company, Lady Matilda, and take our leave. Come, Mary.
This has been a trying scene for you, my sweet young friends.
It has indeed.
Youth is always so full of sympathy, but worthy Mrs. Downright has been almost too much for me.
She is too much.
She is a great deal too much.
I have been rather overcome by her.
Oh, my old Luce, where is it?
What a heart. What a heart.
Allow me to hand you to your carriage, Lady Emily. Miss Douglas. Miss Douglas's. Lady Emily, Miss Douglas's. Oh, charming.
I did then thankfully remember what my saviour said, that the meek possess the earth, or rather, they enjoy what the others possess, and enjoy not. For anglers and meek-spirited men are free from those high and restless thoughts which corrode the sweets of life.
Good morning, Mrs.
Lennox. Oh, my dear Mary, welcome back to Rose Hall. You know not, you cannot conceive what a blank your absence makes in my life.
Oh.
'Tis only when I listen to your dear sweet voice that I forget I am blind.
I should not have stayed so long from you, but I knew you had Colonel Lennox with you. And I could not flatter myself you would even have a thought to bestow upon me.
Ah, Miss Douglas, I am a rough, weather-beaten soldier. My mother gives me many hints how very ill I supply your place.
My Charles is indeed everything that is kind and devoted to me. But there are a thousand little feminine attentions he cannot understand. I would not that he did.
Come, Mother, let me make you comfortable in your chair.
Oh, Charles, your hands have not been used to this. You bear the spirit of an eagle within you. Mary, my love. You must sing my favourite song to Charles.
Oh, yes.
He has never heard you sing, and music has chance to soothe a savage breast.
I've seen the smiling of fortune beguiling. Oh. I've felt all its favours,
yes.
And found its decay.
Yes.
Sweet was its blessing, kind its caressing, but now 'tis fled, 'tis fled.
Oh, Charles, Mary sings like an angel. Is she not a lovely creature?
Well, angels, you know, are always fair.
Oh, young people are so different from what they were in my day. There is no falling in love now. You are all so cautious.
You forget, my dear mother, what a knack I had at falling in love 10 years ago. Since then, I confess, I have got rather out of the way of it.
But Mary is not like the other.
Oh, certainly. Miss Douglas is, all that you say, very amiable. And very accomplished.
Then why not love her? Ah, Charles, promise me that you would at least try to love Mary.
Hush, Mother. Ah, Lady Emily.
My dear Mrs. Lennox, I am come on the part of Lady Juliana Douglas to summon you to surrender the person of her well-beloved daughter, to be disposed of as she, in her wisdom, may think fit.
Oh, no, Lady Emily. Not today, surely. Tomorrow.
No, you are quite welcome.
My orders are peremptory. Come, Mary, are you ready? Come, pay.
I am quite ready. I was wishing you... Oh, my drawings!
Were it not too selfish and presumptuous, I would venture to express a hope that your absence will not be very long. From my poor mother.
I am ready, Emily, quite ready to leave.
Who would not love Mary? Oh, could I but see, could I but hope. I do nothing but hope.
I hope you will visit us soon at Beech Park, Colonel Lennox, and tack a cup of kindness yet for old Lang Syne. I last saw you when I was a thing in the nursery with a blue sash and red fingers.
Where the early ties of the heart remain unbroken, such remembrances do indeed give it back all its first freshness.
Oh, Mrs. Lennox, goodbye. Well, I shall think of you.
Oh, God bless you, my dear child. I cannot urge you to return to this dreary abode, but, oh, Mary, think sometimes in your gaiety that when you do come, you bring gladness to a mournful heart and light in eyes that never see the sun.
We shouldn't have sent the carriage away, Mary. It is cold and you are tired.
I wanted to walk.
This is the last time we shall cross a little Chinese bridge. Tomorrow it is to become a Gothic bridge of size, and the Chinese temple will be a romantic ruined cell. That should delight you, Mary. You might ask Lady Juliana to let you dwell a weeping hermit there. You appear to have had very stormy weather at Rose Hall.
Very much so.
And we have had nothing but calms and sunshine at Beech Park. Is not that strange?
Very singular indeed. Emily! Dear Lady Emily! Go!
Well, what more?
Mrs. Lennox... Oh, Emily. Mrs. Lennox asked Colonel Lennox to try to love me. She recommended me to the love of a man who is indifferent to me. Can there be such a humiliation, such a degradation? And then, how mean, how despicable must I appear in his eyes, thus offered, rejected? How shall I ever be able to convince him that I care not for his love, that I wish it not, that I would refuse, scorn it tomorrow were it offered to me? To have him think that I have all this while been laying snares for him, that all Mrs. Lennox's parade of my acquirements was for this purpose of getting his affections. Oh, I'm afraid I have behaved very like a fool. And yet, what could I do in my situation? Well, what would you have done?
Done? Why, I should have taken the old woman by the shoulders and cried boo in her ear. Well, never mind, since you don't care for the man, there's no mischief done. And we need say no more about it.
Enter.
You wish to see me, Lady Juliana?
Oh, yes, yes. Come in, my dear. Come here and kiss me. You look very well today. Much better than usual. Your complexion is much improved. At the same time, you must be sensible how few girls are married merely for their looks. That is, married well. Unless, to be sure, their beauty is something à merveilleuse. Such as your sister Adelaide's, for instance. I assure you, it is an extraordinary piece of good fortune in a merely pretty girl to make what is vulgarly called a good match. Sit. Sit by me, my dear. Yesterday, I happened upon the Duke of Altamont in the drawing room. He told me he'd come to call on you, but I informed him you were not at home and sent him to the music room with Adelaide. The poor dear man must have confused the names in his agitation. Adelaide played her part admirably, and the Duke is now all but her declared lover, and that merely stands upon a point of punctilio. Oh!
But Lord Lindor...
Oh, Lindor may be handsome and captivating, but he is poor. Lord Cortland can leave him little more than debts. The Duke of Altamont is magnificent.
But he is old. Oh, he's over 40.
Oh, what does that matter? She will have everything a woman could wish for. We shall be so happy. Now, Mary, I have felt quite at a loss about you of late. I can't tell you, therefore, how excessively relieved I was when Mr. Downright this morning asked my permission to address you.
Mr. Downright spoke?
Of course, I could not hesitate an instant. So, you will meet him at dinner as you're accepted.
No, no.
Yes, yes. Yes, Mr. Downright is a man of family and fortune, heir to a title uncommonly handsome, and remarkably sensible and well-informed.
But I know nothing of his character, his principles, his habits, temper, talents, all these things.
That matters, but depends. One would suppose you were talking of your footman. Adelaide knows nothing of the Duke of Altamont.
Except he is a widower, rich and old.
Oh. Old? Indeed, if I had known the gentleman would stay so long in the dining room, I would not have rung for coffee.
But I have not the slightest partiality for Mr. Downright, and it cannot be expected that I should. When I have only been twice in his company, I must be allowed some time before I can make...
I don't mean you are to marry tomorrow. It may probably be 6 weeks or 2 months before everything can be arranged.
But even then, I may not be able to love him as I ought.
Love? No well-educated young woman ever thinks of such a thing now.
I shall never marry anyone you disapprove of.
No, I shall take care of that. Your sister, I know, won't hesitate to sacrifice her own affections to please me.
Yes, Mary, do you imagine Adelaide would love playing John Altamont Esquire?
Indeed, she is convinced of the propriety of preferring the Duke of Altamont. Ooh, here are the gentlemen. Emily, come sit by me. Adelaide, go stand by the window in profile. In profile. Oh, Mary, don't droop so, smile. Oh, Mr. Downright, there is a place by Mary. She has been told and is delighted.
Oh. You may talk to me, Mr. Downright, when you have exhausted Mary with your sparkling conversation.
Your Grace, Lord Altamont, you will take coffee?
Ah, thank you.
Where is Adelaide? Oh, there she is, by the window. Mm. Adelaide, my love, the Duke of Altamont has expressed a desire to hear you play. Mm.
Yes, Lady Juliana.
Adelaide is most accomplished, Your Grace. She would grace any company, unlike her sister, who chose to be raised in Scotland. But I am happy to say Mr. Downright has made his intentions official and is now the accepted lover. He is heir to his uncle, Lord Glenallan, who is very ill indeed. It is all excessively well arranged indeed.
Indeed. Lord Glenallan, I knew him well. He has had the balls here since then.
Morpheus, what dizzy. Come to me, my darling.
Game of billiards, Lindor, huh?
Yes, yes.
But, Lindor, Adelaide is playing.
Oh, Adelaide is playing, but for the Duke of Altamont. Alas, so.
Alas, poor Lindor. Mr. Downright, does not Lady Adelaide play wonderfully well? Ah, yes, I know you would rather it was another singing an old Scotch love song.
No, Emily, no.
Are you in heaven, Lord Altamont, transported by angelic harping? He sleeps. How can Adelaide stand such burning ardour and not scorched, not even singed? Your Grace!
Huh? Oh, charming, very charming.
Who is that man by the door talking to Lindor?
Colonel Lennox.
Lennox?
Colonel Lennox, how kind of you to visit us. You shall shake us out of our lethargy with thrilling tales of battle.
I'm come only to deliver a message to Miss Douglas. From my mother.
And so you shall. Let me lead you into the fray.
Till tomorrow, Lennox.
We need not trouble Dr. Redgill. He is asleep and dreaming of supper.
Pigeon pie, Lady Emily, sauted a pigeon saw better than poetry when well bred.
Lady Juliana, here is Colonel Lennox, the boyhood friend of Lindor's.
How do you do, Lady Juliana?
How do you do, Lennox?
Young lady's heads
of the Duke of Altamont.
How do you do, Your Grace?
How do you do?
Good night, Ted.
Mr. Downright.
How do you do?
Mary, here is Colonel Lennox come to see you. Sit here, Colonel Lennox. I am afraid Mr. Downright has claimed the official position next to Mary.
Emily, no!
Congratulations, Miss Douglas.
Oh, no. Colonel Lennox.
Lennox. Lennox. That is a Scotch name.
My father's family came originally from Argyllshire.
Oh, I did not know that.
I was excessively ill-used by the Scotch.
Yes, Miss Douglas. I have never seen it, but have often wished to visit the home of my ancestors.
It is an extremely nasty and vulgar place. I won't be reminded of it.
I beg your pardon, Lady Juliana. I did not come to torment you with unhappy memories. Merely to ask Miss Douglas... Miss Douglas, will you visit my mother? She is not well. She misses you. We would be most grateful if you would brighten Rose Hall with your presence.
Colonel Lennox, I
would burn every line of poetry ever written.
Unfortunately, Mary's presence is required here. Her engagement to Mr. Downright is shortly to be announced, and she will therefore have a great many duties to occupy her. I cannot be expected to do everything myself.
I understand. In that case, I shall, of course, withdraw my importunate request and take my leave. Goodbye, Lady Juliana, Lady Emily, Mr. Downright, Miss Douglas.
You will come again, Colonel Lennox, tomorrow. Come tomorrow.
Thank you, Lady Emily. But I have a prior engagement to go shooting with Lord Lindor tomorrow.
Got it! It is like to be fair weather.
Coupled all my hounds together.
We will go a-hunting.
And the times be stirring with a...
How kind of Lady Emily to send me these flowers, even though I cannot see them.
But you can smell them. Jessamine and mimosa. She chose them especially for their scent.
How fortunate you are at Beech Park to have a conservatory. You have been a great stranger, my dear. But at such a time, I could not expect you to think of me.
Oh, I have thought much and often, very often upon you, and wished I could come to you, but...
I understand all. Well, God's will be done. Had you come a little sooner today, you would have met Charles. He went out early with Lord Lindor... Ah, Mary, I once hoped I might have lived to see you the happy wife of the best of sons. I may speak out now, since that is all over. God has willed otherwise, and may you be rewarded in the choice you have made. He's a handsome young man, I hear, has a fine fortune and of easy temper. All these things help people's happiness, though they cannot make it. And his choice of you, dear Mary, shows he has some sense.
What are you, Logium? There. I'll put the flowers on the table beside you. Were he really to me what you suppose? I must be highly flattered, but I must assure you, it is not using Mr. Downright well to talk of him as anything to me. My mother in...
Mary! My dear... Let me advise you to beware of being led even by a mother in such a matter as this. God forbid that I should ever recommend a disobedience towards a parent's will, but I fear you have yielded too much to yours.
Oh, yes, indeed, parents ought, if possible, to avoid even forming wishes for their children. Hearts are wayward things, even the best of them, and dear Mrs. Lennox, do not either blame my mother nor pity me, for be assured... With my heart only will I give my hand. And now I must leave you. Goodbye. Colonel Lennox.
Miss Douglas. I did not see your carriage outside.
No, I sent it away. I mean to walk home.
Then I shall accompany you, if I may.
Well, no. It's not necessary.
But I insist. Take care you don't get blood on your clothes. Now, let me leave this game aside, and I shall be at your disposal.
Oh, dear. Oh, bother these gloves. Oh, bother this bonnet. Oh, bother Mrs. Lennox. I am quite able to walk alone.
If you persist in refusing my attendance, you will inflict an incurable wound upon my vanity. I shall suspect that you are ashamed of being seen in such company. To be sure, with my shabby jacket and spattered boots, I do make rather a ruffian-like escort. I should not have dared offer my services to a fine lady. But you are not a fine lady, I know. Oh, you had better take my arm, Miss Douglas. The ground is somewhat muddy and treacherous. Strange I could have forgot that ruined chapel on the hill.
Not at all. It was a Chinese temple last year, and a Greek rotunda the year before.
And next year? What will next year bring, Miss Douglas?
You can tell, Colonel Lennox.
The dresses! Oh, don't try to keep out of the way, Mary. Have the dresses arrived?
Disaster! Excuse me, Miss Mary. Lady Juliana, the cat got in the pantry. Feathers everywhere. Ruin!
Ah, Mary.
What a bear garden. Oh, here you
are, Mary. How sensible you are to hide away. Have you seen the head gardener? Lady Juliana has lost him and is threatening to faint. Why, Mary? Colonel Lennox is absent from your side. You have become like Damon and Pythias these past weeks.
Oh, no. It is Lord Lindor who pleased Damon to his Pythias.
But it is you he looks like to die for.
Emily! Emily!
Oh, yes. Heavens! I must go!
Adelaide, my love. Oh, it's you, Mary. I do wish you'd stop moping in corners and getting in everyone's way. Make yourself useful and copy out the Italian songs for Adelaide. They're in the music room. And if you should see Adelaide, tell her I need her.
Lindor. Oh, Adelaide. Well, I hope my... Lady Juliana asked me to copy... Lady Juliana wishes to speak to you, Adelaide.
I am busy with my harp, as you can see.
Yes, I can see that.
Dear delusions I have known are present still, with love though altered mean. I tread the selfsame path in heart unchanged, but change it now is all that path to me. For where among flowers once I ranged are barren rocks and savage scenery. Behold the wretch beguiled, so lost, so wild. Oh.
For as much as Hector and Adelaide have consented together in holy wedlock...
Where is Lord Lindor, France? Lord Altamont invited me to accompany them on the wedding trip. He asked me as well, and Lady Juliana. Poor Altamont, he has a vague understanding that his safety lies in multitude.
The same by giving and receiving of a ring and by joining of hands.
Emily? Have you had news from Adelaide?
No, Lady Juliana.
Weeks. They returned to Altamont House weeks ago, and yet I have no word, no invitation from Adelaide. Oh, perhaps Adelaide is ill and is unable to write. Perhaps I should go to London to be with her. She would naturally wish to have me by her side.
They are no longer in London.
Gone from London? But they took an opera box. For the season.
Lady Matilda Sutton told me they are now settled at Norwood Abbey. The Duke prefers his country estates to London.
Norwood? Adelaide won't like that at all.
Lindor is staying with them.
He has returned from France.
Yes. Adelaide will like that.
As will Lord Altamont. He enjoys the company of the young.
Lady Juliana, when may I go to Bath to see dear Aunt Grizzy?
What? Douglas? Grizzy Douglas in Bath?
Oh, forgive me, Lady Juliana. I had news of her arrival only this morning.
And... Yeah? Arrival?
Well, Aunt Grizzy came with Sir Sampson and Lady McLaughlin, with Sir Sampson's leg, the withered one.
Oh.
It has spread to his arm and part of his head. But Aunt Grizzy writes Lady McLaughlin is remarkably cheerful. And they are...
And they will come swarming over Beech Park.
Oh, no. They have gone direct to Bath. Aunt Grizzy asked me to make her apologies for not coming at once to see you.
Ah, you see. And you, Mary, will be the excuse. But for you, these people never would have thought of coming to Bath. I will have no connection with them. And I forbid you, Mary, absolutely forbid you to see your aunt or answer her letter.
But Lady Juliana...
Not another word.
From all that's been said, Mary, there can be no doubt that you are the origin of Lady Juliana's unfortunate connection with the family of Douglas.
Undoubtedly.
But for you, it appears that she would not have known, certainly never would have acknowledged that her husband had an aunt.
Certainly not.
It is a most admirable plan, and I shall certainly adopt it. When I have children, I am determined they shall be answerable for my making a foolish marriage, and it shall be their fault if my husband has a mother.
Exactly.
As a first step, I shall patronise Cousin Edward's relations to the last degree. Therefore, unless Mary is permitted to visit her aunt as often as she pleases, I shall make a point of bringing the dear Aunt Grizzy here. Yes, I shall order my carriage this instant and set off. And next week I shall give a grand dinner and Aunt Grizzy shall be queen of the feast.
If you wish to consort with vulgar and inconsequential Scotch persons, Mary, you may go to Bath.
Oh,
Eurydice, Orpheus, come, my darlings. I declare I find your ingratitude quite, quite astounding.
Baby!
Aunt Grizzy!
Oh, Mary!
Oh, Aunt Grizzy!
Oh, Mary, I declare you are grown taller and thinner
and fatter.
Oh, let us go indoors, dear aunt. The whole of Melson Street does not wish to hear how I have changed.
Oh, to be sure. But it is quite astonishing to see you. For I've always understood that Scotland is the place for beauty. Nobody ever can do anything in England. And here you are.
Even Lady Grinchner Growl, if she were alive, poor soul, would find your back astonishing. Straight as a narrow.
Is that Mary? Bring her up. Bring her up. Sir Samson is all impatient.
Poor Sir Samson. You will notice a change in him, Mary. Deaf and paralytic. Now remember to speak up. But what a mighty heart. What spirit. It does on occasion manifest itself in a certain peevishness. But Lady McLaughlin declares that it is all to the good.
Here we are.
Here is Mary, Sir Samson. Mary Douglas, dear Henry's daughter from Glenfern.
Good afternoon, Sir Samson.
You are not at Glenfern, oh, poor soul. You are in Bath. Bath!
So, Mary, I'm glad to see you no worse than you was, dear child. That's more than we can say.
Oh, I am sorry to hear that, Lady McLaughlin.
You see these poor creatures? They are so much upon a par in intellect now that they are reciprocally happy at each other.
Is Sir Samson no better?
Dottled. Completely dottled.
But you must have hopes of a cure here in Bath.
Not at all.
And you, child, what hopes do you have?
News has reached us of a certain Mr. Dunwright.
No, no.
Heir to Lord Glenallan. Handsome family, but stupid, hmm? Have you made yourself known to Mrs. Lennox yet?
Oh, yes, I have visited Rose Hall often.
And Charles Lennox. What do you think of him? Don't blush, child. I don't hold with girls blushing. God bless you.
Oh, I am sure she will be married yet. Now, while we are in Bath, I shall take her out and about and meet the best people. And who knows what may turn up?
Lord Glenallan is what?
Mr. Downright?
Now, Lord Glenallan, with an additional 15,000 per annum. Will you please stop asking questions and just sit where I put you? I declare you are the most excessively contrary child. The window seat. No, the light is too bright at the fire, with your elbow resting on the chimney.
But I don't wish to see Mr. Downright.
Lord Glenallan. And you will have to accustom yourself to his presence when you are married.
No,
you are not tall enough. Sit on the settee there. Try to appear a little less methodistical. You may do as you wish when you are married. Now, well, I've done what I can. You will be very happy, Mary.
Mother, don't leave me, please.
Nonsense. What girl wouldn't wish to be alone with an additional 15,000 per annum? Lord Glenallan. And Mrs. Downright. Welcome.
Yes, here we are, Lady Juliana. Mary, my dear.
She will say yes. She will be married. She will be gone. Oh.
And then?
He looked surprised and pained. Oh, Emily, I do not wish to make him unhappy. And Mrs. Downright said I was wicked. And then they left. And Lady Juliana said... She said, oh, Emily, she said I was...
An ungrateful Scotch upstart and she would have nothing more to do with you.
How did you know?
I heard her. The whole household heard her.
Oh,
Mary, I rather think
think were I such a quiet, civil, well-disposed person as you, I could have married Lord Glenallan well enough. With 500 a year, I grant you, he would be execrable.
Oh, I shall never marry a man with 20,000 a year whom I could not have with 500.
In short, you are to marry for love. Of course, he must be virtuous, noble, dignified, handsome, brave, witty. What would you think of Charles Lennox?
After what passed, I would not marry Colonel Lennox. No. Not if he were to ask me, which is certainly the most unlikely of all things.
Ah, true. I had forgot that little scrape. No, that won't do. It certainly would be most pitiful in you after what passed. Well, there's nothing for it but that you should take Lord Glenallan, all his imperfections. After all, I really see nothing that he wants but a little more brain. And as you'll have the managing of him, you can easily supply that deficiency.
Indeed. I have no genius whatever for managing. I shall, therefore, never marry. Unless I marry a man on whose judgment I could rely for advice and assistance, and for whom I could feel a certain deference that I considered you a wife to a husband.
You insist upon having a perfect genius for your mate.
I confess. I should like that my husband's genius was at least as bright as my own. But virtue and talents on the one side, virtue and tenderness on the other, I look upon as the principal ingredients in a happy union.
And Mary would have virtue and tenderness in a wife.
Virtue and tenderness, Lady Emily. Such a wife would be worth winning, Miss Douglas.
By an honest heart, yes.
Well, Colonel Lennox, I intend to be excessively happy. And yet I don't think Edward will ever find the longitude.
Is there any word of his return?
No. The Navy, it seems, cannot function properly without him. Heavens, I have not written to him this past week. He will think me dead. Or in love with another. I must reassure him at once. Will you be my military advisor, Colonel Lennox, so I may impress him with my grasp of strategy and tactics?
I am no sailor, Lady Emily. You must navigate alone through the channels of communication. Besides, I am loath to quit the garden on such a warm spring day.
Ah, me. Then I am condemned to the schoolroom and ink-stained fingers.
Oh, Emily! Wait, I shall come with you.
No, no, Mary. I must learn my lessons like a good girl.
The May blossom is very beautiful, is it not, Miss Douglas?
Oh, yes.
There.
Thank you.
It is many weeks since last we walked here, Miss Douglas. The hawthorn was barely in leaf.
Yes.
Miss Douglas. Miss Douglas, I am aware of the reason for your reserve towards me. And it serves to increase my admiration for you, your delicacy, your gentle pride.
Colonel Lennox, I do not...
No, no, hear me out, I beg you. I know at the beginning I did not do justice to your merits and that you must regard any attentions I pay you with suspicion. You will consider them as acts of duty towards my mother rather than the spontaneous expression of my own feelings. Believe me, Miss Douglas, what I now feel for you has grown in spite of any ill-judged attempts to force it. It is the gentleness of your heart, the independence of your spirit, the quiet grace of your every thought and action that have inspired my admiration, my love. I have but a narrow fortune. It is yours. I have a plain soldier's soul. It is yours. I have a heart that is filled with passion. It is yours. All I have is yours.
Colonel Lennox... I am, oh, of course, I am, but you have tried to love me in obedience to your mother's wishes, and you think you have succeeded. I cannot be the dupe of your delusion. I will not give myself to one who has been solicited to love me.
Oh, my poor mother. Is it impossible for you to forgive and forget the foolish words of a simple soul who lives only in retrospection and futurity?
Where there is understanding, there is no need for forgiveness. But forget, never.
Have you then such a poor opinion of my character that nothing will... There is nothing more to be said. I had hoped to leave England knowing your heart was... But it is not to be.
You are leaving?
Tomorrow. My regiment sails in a few days.
Colonel Lennox, I did not know.
It is perhaps welcome. We shall have no need of contrivance to avoid each other. Goodbye, Miss Douglas.
Goodbye, Colonel Lennox. Goodbye. Oh, forever.
Hey, Now, Mary, I have determined, while you are staying with us, that you shall enjoy all the cultural opportunities Bath has to offer. Oh, it will be a great thing for you, you know, Mary, to be acquainted with Mrs. Pullens. Oh, Mrs. Pullens, Flora McFosses was, is a very clever woman and a most excellent manager. Only think, Mary, she never uses a bit of soap in her house.
Everything is washed by steam.
Steam? Is that what turns the linen yellow? Oh, it's quite remarkable.
My domestic economy, Miss Mary, is my merit. I pass nothing over. Oh, can I tempt you to another gooseberry tart?
Oh.
Made with gooseberries that are 3 years old.
I declare, Mary, I can't think enough of these gooseberries. And now we have to discuss poetry at Miss Graves and Miss Crick's. Oh, truly, Mary, Bath is a wonderful place.
But not as wonderful as a country that has produced the mighty minstrel of the mountains and the polished poet of the transatlantic plain.
Oh, how true, Miss Greaves.
Pray, Miss Douglas, are you an admirer of crab tails?
Crab tails? I don't think I ever tasted them, Miss Crick. Indeed, I don't think our crabs have tails. Why, Mary, there was no reason for us to leave so early. I was going to recite farewell to Loch Arbour when you made us come away. Oh, I declare, Mary, it is most sudden that you have to go to Rose Hall. I had expected you to stay for several weeks. Oh, if you must visit the sick, dear Mary, there is our old Sir Samson. Oh, I'm sure I think Mrs. Lennox would insist you stay in Bath if she were aware of all the facts.
To keep one sacred flame through life, unchilled, unmoved, to love in wintry age the same that first in youth we loved, to feel that we adore
oh,
with
Mary,
such refined excess.
God forgive me, but my heart has not yet weaned from worldly wishes.
We could not love with less. This is love, faithful love, such as saints might feel above.
Alas, our time here below is so short that it matters little whether it be spent in joy or grief, provided it be spent in innocence and virtue.
As yours has been, dear Mrs. Lennox.
Oh, dearest Mary, if you live long, you will live to think of the hours you have given me as the fairest of many a happy day that I trust heaven has yet in store for you.
Do not tire yourself with talking. Colonel Lennox will be with you soon. The message was sent weeks ago. Sleep now. There.
Yes. God has made some people whose powers are chiefly ordained to comfort the afflicted.
Oh, she sleeps. Oh, thank God. He loved me. Truly, tenderly loved me. Had I but repaid his noble frankness, had I suffered him to read my heart when he laid his open before me, I might now have gladdened the last days of the mother he adores. Oh, I might have proudly avowed the affection I must now forever hide. Oh, oh, Charles!
Mary. Oh, Mary!
Oh. Charles! Mary! I see! Oh, my children! I see!
Mother! Oh, Mother, give us your blessing!
Five days. Only 5 days ago, Emily. God gave her back the gift of sight before he took her to himself. Forever. She's gone. And he is gone.
It is a great pity Colonel Lennox had to return to his regiment so soon.
Well, his leave of absence was recalled. The army is on the move and a battle is expected to be fought.
And Colonel Lennox will be in the thick of it as ever.
Oh, Emily, I cannot bear to think of it. Oh,
Mary, you're exhausted and overwrought. Sit here in the shade. Having watched so long over the mother, you must not now begin to fret over the son.
Oh, but I must. You see, oh, you're my dearest friend. I can keep you in ignorance no longer. I love Charles Lennox, and I'm loved in return. His mother gave her blessing before she died, and we are to be married when he returns. Oh, if he returns.
And so it seems Colonel Lennox and you have been playing the dying lover and the cruel mistress to each other. How I detest such duplicity, and duplicity with me.
No, Emily. I think that you've misunderstood me. That open and candid yourself, almost to a fault, you readily resent the appearance of duplicity in others. But you are too generous not to do me justice.
Oh, Mary, how little do I appear in mine own eyes at this moment. No, it was not because I am open and candid that I resented your engagement with Colonel Lennox. It was because I, who had plighted my faith to Edward, I was beginning to love him myself. Only beginning, observe, for it is already over. I needed but to be aware of my danger to overcome it.
Perhaps Colonel Lennox...
No, Colonel Lennox was not to blame. There was no false play on either side. His thoughts were all along taken up with you, even while he talked and laughed and quarrelled with me.
Dearest Lady Emily, how I admire this noble candour, this generous self-abasement.
Well, Miss Douglas, you have experienced the reaction of your sweet, candid cousin. Now you have only to break the news to Lady Juliana.
Oh, dear.
Come, Mary. You must prepare yourself for battle.
No. It is too bad of you, Mary, to come to me with this nonsense of engagements and who knows what when I have just this moment received such horrible news from Adelaide.
My sister, what has happened?
He has ruined me. She and that treacherous brute Lindor.
Brother, what has he done?
Of course, it is all the fault of the Duke. Silly, obstinate man.
Lady Juliana, please tell us what is wrong.
I am going to faint. Yes.
You must try to tell us what upsets you, Lady Juliana. How can we help otherwise?
None can help. London, carriage, opera box, all gone. There, in her letter.
Goodness. Heavens.
Oh, no. Is she dying?
Dead.
Oh, dear. She's run off with Lindor. She says here she was bored.
How could she have been bored with so much money?
And the Duke was so dull, and Lindor was staying with him, and was so elegant and passionate. They've gone to the south of France.
Oh, if only she'd been taught the principles of religion. Now her fate is to be... Oh!
South of France. I am told it is most charming, almost fashionable. I must, I suppose, inform Lord Courtland of what has happened. By the way, Mary, that matter of you and Colonel Lennox, I absolutely forbid it. You shall break off all intercourse with him.
Emily, he's safe. I've had a letter. He's coming.
I know you are a great hero, Colonel Lennox, but you must see now you have quit the army. You are merely a person with no fortune or prospects worth mentioning. My own son, Edward Douglas, has recently returned from who knows what dangers at sea and is to marry Lady Emily, but she has a fortune, so they will be happy. I cannot consent to Mary making such a foolish marriage.
My fortune, Lady Juliana, is small, but sufficient for the purposes of rational enjoyment. Our minds do not require the stimulus of spending money to rouse them into happiness.
I must ask you to leave Beech Park. And as I cannot rely upon your word as a gentleman to break off all contact with Mary, I shall keep her constantly under my own eye. Good morning, Colonel Lennox.
Come, me own one, come, me fair one, come now unto me. Could you fancy a poor sailor lad, Emily? Emily!
Dear Edward, he would marry me whatever my father said. But Mary, what could have possibly instigated you and Colonel Lennox to so absurd an act as that of asking Lady Juliana's consent?
You could not openly set at defiance one of the most sacred duties, the obedience of a child to a parent. I could not possibly be happy were I to marry under such circumstances.
You have much too nice a conscience. What a pity it is you and I cannot change places. Here I am, languishing for a little opposition to my love. My marriage to Edward will be quite a quiet everyday affair.
Hardly quiet. Edward is
very noisy. Oh, Mary, I see perfectly well what you think of my penchant for such a rattling, roaring boy. You find it passing strange that I, who am certainly cleverer than Edward, should yet be so partial to him, and that my lynx eye should have failed to discover his faults. Can't you guess what renders even these very faults so attractive to me?
Well, the old story, I suppose. Love.
I love him with my whole heart, faults and all. His faults are real, genuine, natural faults. His ignorance is not the ignorance of vulgarity or stupidity, but the ignorance of a light head and a merry heart.
I am easy, good-tempered and free. And I don't give a single pin, me boys, what the world thinks of me.
Edward, give me that letter at once.
I have had a letter from Adelaide. She wishes me to join her in the south of France.
She must be wretched and lonely indeed.
Oh, I have at least one daughter who loves me. You, Mary, may marry whom you please. Only remember, I am not responsible for the consequences. Emily, you shall inform the servants I am leaving immediately and will require every assistance with my boxes.
They will be delighted, Lady Juliana.
Mother! Oh, let us part in friendship. I hope you will ever consider my house as your home.
Oh, try not to be quite so stupid, Mary.
Edward rarely visits the rose garden, I trust.
Oh, dearest Charles, your eye is still quite bruised. Edward can be almost provokingly boyish. I had hoped that in your society he might be led to something of more refinement. Oh, weak and vulgar relations are an evil when one's tastes and ideas have been refined by superior intercourse. Oh, Lady Juliana has written.
Does she intend to return for our wedding?
No. She finds foreign manners and principles too congenial to her taste ever to return to Britain. She has sent us instead a pair of Sheffield plate grape scissors.
And now, Glenfern.
Oh, I shall travel back in Sir Sampson's carriage and break my happy news when we are all gathered together at Glenfern. And then you will come north. Oh, Charles, how they will love you.
Mary the Mary! How delightful!
Lennox! Who taught you Lennox? Lennox? He's a scoundrel. You shan't marry a Lennox. I won't suffer it.
Oh, Mary, how you have deceived us. What a dagger you have plunged into all our hearts.
Mary, if you marry Colonel Lennox, none of us can be at your wedding.
Mary, to marry a Lennox? How dreadful.
You father was a Beelzebub. I won't have it. He said he could make a Sir Sampson out of a moldy lemon. Lennox!
Not yet, Julie. You have only to give up this unworthy attachment.
Lennox, clever Lennox. Ruined Lennox.
You must renounce him.
Forever, Mary.
You must never think any more on Carl.
Lady McLaughlin! Oh, Lady McLaughlin, you must tell me how Colonel Lennox, who is the finest person in the world, how can he be the object of Sir Sampson's anathema?
Dear child, the origin of the feud between the families of Lennox and McLaughlin is long forgotten. But in their youth, Charles Lennox's father ridiculed Sir Sampson.
The mouldy lemon.
Oh, amongst other things. Oh. Sir Sampson hated General Lennox because he laughed at him. But everybody laughs at the hatred of a little old man in a cocked hat. You may laugh too. You are going to be married to Charles Lennox. Oh. I'm glad of it.
I wished you to marry him, so now God bless you.
But Sir Sampson...
Give me a kiss, Mary Douglas. I'll manage Sir Sampson.
Thank you. Aye. This is a grand day for me and Mrs. Douglas. For all of us at Glenfern. Our wee Mary. Our dear Mary. Aye. I ask you to charge your glasses. And join me in a toast. To the bride and groom, Colonel and Mrs. Lennox, Mary and Charles.
Mary and Charles!
Oh, no. Oh, dreadful news.
Gritty dear, what is the matter?
Oh, dreadful.
This is a communication from Lochmarlie Castle. Sir Sampson McLaughlin is dead.
In consequence of this, Lady McLaughlin writes, the Lochmarlie estate, lands, properties, chattels, real and chattels, personal, are inherited by Charles Lennox, Esquire of Rose Hall, Somerset. They're only going to Lochmarlie. Goodbye.
Don't visit us at Lochmarlie soon. Oh, very soon.
There's fine shooting to be had, Archie. Come soon.
Aye, aye. Goodbye.
Farewell, dearest Mary.
Goodbye.
My dear Mary has found the love I told her of. The love of a virtuous object, founded upon esteem and heightened by similarity of tastes and sympathy of feelings into a pure and devoted attachment.
Aye, there's nothing like the prospect of good shooting to cheer a marriage along.
It will be many weeks before you may contemplate that, dear Mr. Douglas. There are a great many things to be done here.
Mary will be kept busy making jams and jellies. It's the best autumn for berries I can remember.
Oh, what a lucky creature Mary is to think of her succeeding to Lady McLaughlin's laboratory, all so nicely fitted up with every kind of thing. I'm sure it will do Colonel Lennox the greatest of good. Colonel Lennox cannot propose a better model to himself than Sir Sampson McLaughlin. He has left him a noble example of propriety, frugality, hospitality and respectability, and above all, of forgiveness of his mortal enemies.
Becky, Betty, Bambi, Beanie, ready?
Yes, Belle!
And the poor, the sick, and the desolate will unite in blessing what heaven has already blessed, this happy marriage.
In the final episode of Marriage, Mary was played by Meg Fraser, Emily by Fiona Francis, and Charles by Dougal Lee. Juliana was played by Vivian Dixon, Adelaide by Harley Loudon, Aunt Jackie and Mrs. Lennox by Anne Scott-Jones, Aunt Grizzy by Rose McBain, Aunt Nicky by Eliza Langland, Lady McLaughlin by Alison Peebles, Dr. Redgill and Sir Sampson McLaughlin by Crawford Logan, Archie Douglas by Simon Tate, Lord Lindor by Gregor Powery, Mrs. Douglas by Ali Walton, and the Duke of Altamont by Raymond Ross. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Marriage was dramatised by Patricia Hannah from the novel by Susan Ferrier, and directed in our Edinburgh studios by Patrick Rayner.